Welcome to the Battleground Wisconsin. My name is Matt Brusky, and I'm the Deputy Director here at Citizen Action of Wisconsin. And welcome to another beautiful spring week. A little damp, but good for the state. We need a, we always need rain this time of year. But we're happy to have Robert Craig, our Executive Director. No matter what the weather is, Robert is with us. Robert, good to have you.
Good to be here. Be careful what you ask for. With climate change, your wish for rain could cause the skies to open up.
Well, you know, look, this time of year, I expect it to rain. It's good. And it's supposed to be 4 days of sunshine the next this over the weekend. So, folks, get out and enjoy this beautiful state when you can. But as I always say, you don't come here for the weather. You come here for politics, particularly looking at this great state of Wisconsin. Robert, before we dive into a lot of the issues that are going on, I do want to thank everybody in Wausau that made it out and the broader Wausau area. We had folks like Joni Anderson driving a couple hours, Eric Wilson continuing to travel great distances to meet our members. But thank you to everyone who came out to the 40th event in Wausau last week. On Thursday was outstanding, well over 60 people, great food. Joel Lewis, great pizza, great drinks, fantastic location. Shout out to the Whitewater Music Hall. If you're in that area and you're looking for a place to have an event, highly recommend it. Great people over there. But Robert, this was our second to last 40th event. Wildly successful, but we got one more, Eau Claire. We're going to close where our first regional co-op was created by Jeff Smith in Eau Claire. We'll be there April 30th, 6 p.m. We'll have the details. Want everybody who's within driving distance of Eau Claire to get there. Very excited for the event. We even have a DJ. Oh, yeah, going to be a good time. Robert, any thoughts you have on the 40th? And I will not attempt to pry another history story, but just get any reflections you have now that we've been through three of these amazing events. Actually, four, excuse me.
Four, yeah, please. And this is your last opportunity. This is the last event, though there are resources on our website, a 40th anniversary video, our low money, low tech version of Ken Burns. And then also a historical timeline for those who are interested. But I think the lesson is that over the last 40 years, there's nothing magical about the name or anything like that, but that this organization has been an organization of doers who have tried to do something about the toxic right-wing drift, more than drift, takeover in our society since the early stages of the Reagan Revolution, when we were founded. And that we, if we're going to navigate through what we're facing now, existential threats in this election and ecologically, we need to be doers and get off the sideline. And we need more people with us and more people who are with us, finding a way to engage more, to volunteer more, to talk to other people, to talk to your fellow Wisconsin citizens in a constructive way that can change things, achieve what we're trying to achieve, and head off authoritarianism.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Folks, it is us. It is us, our action, our engagement that makes the difference. So please come on out. Have some fun with us in Eau Claire again, Tuesday, April 30th, 6 p.m. Look forward to seeing you all there. Robert, you just in describing sort of this moment we're in, you know, talked about that we're headed into an election cycle where some of the basic, you know, functionings of our democracy appear to be at stake. And we just came out of a spring election where we're living it. It's actually playing out in Green Bay right now. A lot of what we're worried about with Trump and the whole MAGA crew around contesting elections, false conspiracy theories, you know, accusations of fraud. Well, it's happening, Robert. Right now in Green Bay, Green Bay City Council member, former, he was defeated, Stephen Campbell, is refusing to step down in spite of not only losing the election to one of our endorsed candidates, then losing the recount to Joey Presley, and still, as of yesterday, refusing to step down, making charges of fraud while not clarifying at all what that is. Robert, this is a, I mean, this is a preview. This is a guy in Stephen Campbell, just so folks, you know, most people have no idea who he is. Incumbent conservative, MAGA type. He played at the city council, the January 6 choir. These are the folks who have been arrested for their activities in the insurrection. So this is a fully MAGA aligned fella. But Robert, preview of what we might be seeing this fall in terms of just completely calling into question the basic functionings of our elections.
Well, there's been horrendous lying about elections for well beyond Donald Trump. I mean, that there was a wave of daddy theft voter fraud going on that required a draconian photo ID law that was done by Scott Walker and the gerrymandered legislature was a lie. Okay, obviously Trump losing the 2020 election, I mean, winning it was a lie. And but there, it's interesting, Matt, despite all the Republicans that were willing to participate at some level in this, and I include Robin Voss, yes, he did not go all the way along on the Michael Gableman clown show. He appointed him in order to appease that side, and he's led credence throughout his career to things such as a non-existent voter fraud as a tool of disenfranchising people they think they're more likely to vote against them. But what's interesting, Matt, is only a subset of MAGA candidates have actually had the firmness of belief to follow through on this when they lose elections. Kari Lake in Arizona, obviously Donald Trump himself. But here we have a true believer who thinks it must have been stolen, doesn't know how. What surprises me is, and this has to do with how much of our democracy depends on norms, not on laws, is that this man can prevent the rightful winner from taking office simply by filing a lawsuit, and now the election can't be certified, and we have this sense of limbo. Why do we have this system where that's possible? Because it was unfathomable before that people wouldn't concede unless there was some good grounds to believe they might not have lost.
Yeah, Robert, this is preen all over again in terms of just trying to use whatever you can to stall it out. And look, we talked about this the week after the election that Green Bay was one of the, you know, bright spots in terms of there was improvement, a much more progressive city council. This was one of the critical races where there was a major flip. It is also worth pointing out the recount that was conducted was paid for by was paid for by excuse me by Campbell, because he it was not even within the margin where you're automatically granted a recount. So I mean, we're not talking about somebody who lost by a vote or two, right? In these local elections, these are hundreds of votes. So you know, this is just a it's a canary in the coal mine. I'm assuming this will all get worked out, and Presley will get seated. But folks, we should be expecting these kinds of things. And so I wanted to at least raise it and give a shout out to all the folks in Green Bay. Just we'll keep an eye on this and make sure that this goes the way we would expect it, which means this Presley will get seated. But yes, Robert, last word.
Let me just say it is reminiscent of the Scott Walker appointees who won't leave, right? It's the same sort of norm breaking where we're vulnerable to it because it was never anticipated that someone would have that lack of class, that audacity, that disregard for our basic institutions, which is now defended by one of the two major dominant political parties in our country, and therefore everyone that follows them and votes habitually for their candidate.
Well, if there is one upside to this, Jason has gotten a lot of coverage and has handled himself amazing in this. He's very like thoughtful about this, and he's getting a lot of media attention that he's not getting seated. And I can just tell you, as someone who was involved in his interview with us, extraordinarily thoughtful individual. Just moved back to the Green Bay area and works at UW Green Bay, where he was, I believe, a former student. Just incredibly thoughtful and patient kind of person, not a bomb thrower, even though very progressive, right? Amazing, solid values. So I hope he just uses this patiently to further draw attention to the newness, the progressive majority that actually does exist in Green Bay. And people should get excited about it and start to have expectations for what we can and ought to be doing to take Green Bay forward.
And
With
then
that,
at another level, because I made it all very, we did democracy and heavy, right? This is also just terrible sportspersonship. This is like the Detroit Pistons refusing to shake hands after losing a hard-fought playoff series. And that has not historically been respected in our culture and country. Now, part, half of our country or one party thinks that's good and that's their side, that it's just the bratty bad sports people who won't even admit when they lose.
well, and since you brought it up, yeah, we'll say, or similar to like the Green Bay Packers trying to back out of a multi-year contract to try to take money away from the city of Green Bay. But I digress. We discussed that last week, and I promise you, listeners, we will talk more about that issue down the road. That is not going away. Folks, you're listening to the Battleground Wisconsin. We're Citizen Action. You can find us at citizenactionwi.org. Welcome back to the Battleground Wisconsin. We are talking about all things Wisconsin. And Robert, I wanted to raise a report. I think it came out late last week, maybe early this week. And it had a number that I must admit I'm not shocked by, but it's eye-opening, and it's worth, because it's, actual data, worth raising. And that is that 40% of Wisconsin teachers leave the profession in 6 years. Robert, it's a staggering number for such a critical profession that, like, it is central to the future of the state, Robert.
Well, it cuts to the quick in many ways of what is wrong with the quote-unquote education reform debate, which is far too dehumanized a way to think about it. I mean, the whole right-wing approach, which is we just spend too much money on public education, we should defund it. People need to realize that this has consequences. When you do what Walker did, he called it tools, let's call it what it was, dramatically reduced the salaries and benefits of teachers, of educators, and then reduce their role and influence in education, it's going to make bad job, underpaid jobs that were already very hard jobs. And they also have been made harder by the complete underinvestment in education. And so this stuff has consequences. We don't say it in other professions. We don't say, let's cut the salary benefits of doctors and expect that to go well, right? Or engineers or electricians or anything else. But in education, it's some special realm where it's been defined as bad, inefficient government. And some of this is code words because it's focused especially on majority minority community. Therefore, there's a coded racism involved in it. And then we don't look at what it actually is. If you want a high quality education, you need high quality educators, period. Otherwise, people will leave if you make these unrewarding, unbearable jobs. And that is what people who actually work in education say. And let me say about, since we had this historic advance for voucher conspiracy that a Democratic governor with a background in education signed off on, okay? That model is to pay teachers and respect them even less. And we don't have data on the turnover rate in those schools because, of course, they're not required, despite depending on public money, to keep it, unless they are religiously motivated, like they're a nun. I'm telling you, those are really terrible jobs. And that is no way to deliver quality education to our kids. And then we wring our hands, and the business elites that fund all of these campaigns and back these candidates, that they don't have the trained workforce that somehow we're supposed to produce with them without any investment of social resources, which they're hoarding in the vital function of educating our young people.
Absolutely. There's one other piece of information I wanted to bring to bear in this conversation that the report found. And this isn't surprising, but it is something that will require serious intentional work that includes what Robert just talked about in terms of how the profession's treated. But it is still a overwhelmingly white and female-dominated workforce here in Wisconsin, I believe 94%. That is another issue that has to be addressed as if we as progressives, let's just say, could get the legislature back or get a legislature that would actually start caring about addressing public education. This is an area that needs to be addressed over the next decade, in addition to, just how much are we paying and including them in the decision-making part. But we have to, in the same way we're thinking about the jobs and the careers in climate, and retrofitting being overly male and white, intentionally disrupt that in order to make sure that we are building the kind of workforce that's prepared to do the job. And we know we need more diversity of both gender and race that reflects the students in the state too. So very important data in this, and all of those, both of those require government intervention, right? Require us to use the government, our democracy, to actually address these issues because they're complicated, but fundamentally critical to our future. Robert.
Let's say we got back the legislature. I want to run a scenario, and it would take two cycles because of the maps that the governor compromised with himself on. Here's the thing, right? Can we, and this is something on our side we need to be clearer and sharper about, if we have a Democratic legislature, Democrat governor, will they do what's necessary to actually invest in education, make the teaching profession a profession that draws our best and brightest and retains them? And the answer is not naturally. You don't hear most Democrats talking about this being a problem with how we treat teachers and how we pay them and what their authority is in schools, something that's also critical in this. We've created a situation where administrators dominate in a way where, when in fact, the experts on education. Our children are the people, the frontline educators, okay? And so, and what will they fund it better? Yes. Will they fund it sufficiently? Not without pressure, because it would take tough things like actually revoking a lot of the big corporate and wealthy tax cuts that were done by this gerrymandered legislature and Scott Walker, which would be, would lead to huge spending against us to do it. But here's what would be serious, Matt. Having a standard to actually increase, like become one of the best states in the country for supporting teachers, both financially and in terms of their workloads and the resources they have and their influence over education. But the other thing we would do is we would look at all the underspending over the last two decades. This is a knowable number. How much should we have invested just to keep up with inflation to do what we did in the turn of the century? And what are we doing now? What's the gap? That's a very large number. That is what we need to get consensus behind in the Democratic Party, so when they regain power, they will actually implement it.
So this is actually a good segue to something I wanted to talk about. We're going to do it later, but we're going to talk about it now. And that's, look, we're in a critical stage right now. Nomination papers are now, you can take them out for the state assembly, for the state senate seats, for these fall elections. Who runs? I keep talking about this every week. Who runs in these assembly seats matters. What kind of Democrats, especially in the multiples, right? We got about a 10 to a dozen seats that, like, we're going to have new people in. There's going to be their new districts in the assembly that we have a chance to win. Who sits in those seats? Who takes out nomination papers between now and the end of May and wins those primaries will matter. So when candidates come and talk to you, don't just listen to what they tell you, because all Democratic candidates are going to try to sound progressive and, you know, sound good. Sure, fine. You need to ask them tough questions about what Robert just said. Are you willing to actually fund and finance public education at the rate it's necessary to keep up with inflation? That didn't happen. Ask them what they thought about the shared revenue. Do they think that that was okay? Will they do more? Are they willing to push the governor, right? Are they willing to work with their colleagues or push their colleagues on this, right? These are all questions you have to ask them, because if the revenue's not there, you can't, you know, if you can't change it. Are you willing to have a progressive taxation? Do you think there should be maybe some type of billionaires tax or wealth tax or something that can bring in more revenue to do what Robert just said? That money don't come from nowhere. So it's easy to articulate, oh yeah, I believe in public education. I want to fund it properly. Well, are you willing then? You got to ask some very specific questions about that. And I think that's really important. And as progressive leaders, which a lot of our listeners are in their communities, it's important you're asking those questions and finding out, and then making sure that we support and back candidates that actually are going to go to Madison after they win and do what's necessary to help have a cultural shift, even within our own party. Robert, any final words on this before we go to break?
Well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Matt. This is about not just people. Look, there used to be a time where you'd have bipartisan support for education. It's not true anymore. It may be true in the future if the MAGA conspiracy can be fully broken and discredited. But at this stage, it has to be with the debate is with the Democratic Party. What people need to realize is that's a very big tent. It's a very broad spectrum, and it matters a lot what they actually stand for. Therefore, there are two fights, a two-front battle. You have to win the primary with candidates that will do what's necessary to restore Wisconsin to its leadership role as supporter of education, healthcare access, everything else we used to be a leader on, workers' rights. And not all Democrats have that analysis or the fortitude to take on the major lobbying interests and political interests that will make it hard for us to get reform and change.
With that, folks, we're going to take a break. You're listening to the Battleground Wisconsin, where Citizen Action. You can find us at citizenactionwi.org. We're all over social media, particularly Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Welcome back to the Battleground Wisconsin. Robert, we energies. I think most of our listeners, right after I say that, know what's next. We energies, what I like to always describe as sort of our failed utility here that is failing us in its ability to make a green energy transition, and in an effort to try to tinsel over and fix that, continue. This is massive rate increases. We just had a multi-year, I think 13, 14% increase, and now they're proposing a multi 15% rate increase. And Robert, they like to justify this around that they're doing this to meet the transition and cut trees and other things, right? Robert, your thoughts on, I'll just say, it's an outrageous rate increase right now for a failing utility. Robert, your thoughts on this latest 15% increase?
And I'll get to failing question. That's a great question to raise, Matt. But for those of you who listen statewide, this is by far the largest utility in the state because it owns several different brands. It has the whole eastern side of the state and well into north central Wisconsin. But there's similar problems with the other big utilities, Alliant, Xcel, et cetera. But We Energies has been the headlines this week, and it's by far affects the most people. It is one of the worst utilities from the standpoint of climate change and a green transition in the country. One of the worst. It has right-wing leadership that is actually part of a central core part of the right-wing conspiracy in the state to dominate the state, gerrymander the legislature, elect the Robin Voss, Scott Walker wing and give them full control in the state, okay? So these are not good actors. Originally, when the rather I think problematic compromise was made. We wouldn't have public utilities, but we would have private utilities that were publicly regulated by the Public Service Commission in Wisconsin. They were supposed to operate in the public interest because we'd have strong public oversight, a public watchdog. Well, this is a historical pattern. They have so much money because they're a Fortune 500 company. Over time, they have in many ways captured the Public Service Commission, not because the Evers appointees are corrupt, but because all of the rules and structures benefit some an entity with all of this experience and capacity and knowledge and experts they could throw at every process, whereas the public can barely understand what's going on and the advocacy community is underfunded. Okay, so here's the thing: they get a guaranteed profit. Profit of almost 10%. That's why people love investing in these utilities. But they put all of the costs of their business decisions on us. So what they're trying to do, Matt, is they're, oh, and then by the way, the stuff about them being below the national average, blah, 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 totally misleading. It's the second highest in the Midwest. The other places that are higher have a different form of energy that's much more expensive. So it's not apples to apples. They're expensive. And what's happened is, since they underinvested in renewable energy, and since they have blocked people's ability to get rooftop solar, that's distributed energy, community solar, energy conservation measures to reduce the consumption of their product, unlike, say, to the South, Commonwealth Edison in a bluer state has been much better at this. They have a lot of, they need to build a lot of capacity. They only want to build renewable energy capacity they can control, big capital projects they can finance because they put more of their profit on finance than they do even on selling the energy. And so they're controlling it. It's going way too slow. How we do a transition, and they want pay us to pay for a much more expensive transition than necessary because they are late. And because they refuse to enable the cheaper alternatives, such as distributed energy like rooftop solar and community solar, and greater energy conservation, which reduces the need for power entirely. And now they are going to try to ram through PSC that we're going to pay for their business decisions and guarantee their continued windfall profits, Matt. So it's a complete outrage, and people can't afford it. And there is a villain here, just like insurance companies and hospitals and big pharma. In the healthcare cost crisis, big utilities led by wind energies are at the heart of this, and their power has to be reduced if we are going to meet the climate crisis and have affordable energy for everyone in Wisconsin.
Look, people, one of the reasons the debate is starting to change on this, and there is a growing movement against We Energies. Shout out to the coalition we're a part of that DSA has really led Milwaukee, that is calling for a public utility. And that is basically just straight up anger and upset over the way We Energies operates, right? And what way Robert just talked, it's captive. And that's an example, the tide's turning. But also, shout out to Northside Rising, right? Our cooperative here in Milwaukee that has been working on this issue in partnership with a number of local groups, Walnut Way, the Sierra Club, and really raising both the issue of these outrageous rate increases, but also how these rate increases impact folks who don't have the means to pay for them, don't make a lot of money, and are often trapped in some of the worst energy efficient houses, right? In Milwaukee, that's often folks of color, but throughout the state, people are experiencing this throughout the state, where you're in some of the homes, especially if you don't make a lot of money, you're the least weather efficient, right? And so you're going to bear the biggest burden of this. And so thank you to all the people who've been organizing, Kiva on our team, fantastic work on this, but really bringing the voices of people who disproportionately suffer from this energy burden of paying absurd amounts of their income. The notion that somebody's paying over 10% or 15, some people 20% of their income on utilities is absurd. And that it's being done in the name of greening when they have failed to make that transition is even more outrageous. And so I just want to thank the people, because it doesn't happen without folks stepping up and telling their stories about what's happening to them. Because not everybody understands that, Robert.
So you're right to, applaud DSA for making this an issue, having a for-profit utility in the first place, and what its motives are and incentives are, is at the nub of this. I want to be clear what a group of coalition partners have done, and done the heavy lifting around, is to build the capacity to actually try to influence what the Public Service Commission does, which is really difficult work. And that is a coalition led by Walnut Way, a local community group here in Wisconsin, African American led and focused on the Lindsay Heights neighborhood, and Sierra Club, great environmental partner. And we're a partner in that with the support of the Energy Foundation. And what the group has done also is called out the issue of energy burden, which is the racist cost of heating and lighting. In Milwaukee, African Americans pay 6 to 20% of their incomes, which is totally unaffordable because of the high price of energy at We Energies, and because they are denied any mechanism for a greater energy efficiency. And there's an opportunity with Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, it's just coming online, to try to change that, and rooftop solar or community solar. And white folks pay 2% or less, many of them 1% of their incomes. And so that has been at the heart of this. And I think the Public Service Commission, because of this coalition and pressure, will likely knock down this the size of this rate increase. But let's be clear, this is just their opening bid. They don't expect to get this whole amount. It's sort of like, well, that somewhere in the middle is what they really think they're going to get once they fight with us. They shouldn't get a damn cent, and they should be required to supercharge all the other renewable energy advances and conservation advances that make us less dependent on them. They'll never do that without being forced by government, by our democracy, because they're mostly concerned about their stock price and their stock dividends.
Folks, if you want to get involved in this and fight back against We Energies and the energy burden and be a part of pushing for renewable and green energies in our communities, please reach out to us. I'll put a link where you can actually reach out directly to Kiva, who's helping lead a lot of this work. Please reach out to her and get involved in our effort. Well, Robert, before we go to break, the big election news this week was that Ann Walsh Bradley, Supreme Court Justice here, Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, is stepping down. A reminder to our listeners, Ann Walsh, I think everybody should know this, but is part of the liberal, the current progressive liberal, however you want to describe it, majority on the court. That means there'll be an election next spring. Van Hollen has already, right? It's Van Hollen has already announced. No, who am I? Have I gone back too far? The Republican who's announced, but we're going to have a contested, critical Supreme Court election next April is the big news coming out of this. Obviously, a thank you to Ann Walsh Bradley for the service on the Supreme Court. It's clear by this decision that this is something she's wanted to do, and I'm sure there was a lot of pressure for her to stay and keep this majority. This is obviously somebody who really did want to step down, and everybody I think deserves the right to be able to decide when the time is for them. So, folks, and Robert, I want to get your thoughts as we go to break. That means we have another critically important Supreme Court election. I'm excited about it because I actually think we now understand and can continue to evolve the agenda and continue to win Supreme Court races. And it makes next April's election matter. To be honest, this last April was depressing, not having a legitimate statewide race that actually makes and brings some coherence to our election. Well, we got it. Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's campaign season again, never ends in Wisconsin. So I've already had an over an hour conversation with a potential candidate not announced yet. And I use the opportunity to learn about the candidate, but to learn what all of the consultants and everyone is thinking about the race. So, it's interesting. Some people are dinging Ann Walsh Bradley for not waiting until after the election, so that she could then have Evers replace her and have almost a 10-year term, like an NFR 9.5-year term. Well, She probably believes in the norms of democracy, but in addition, who knows what's going on in her life and whether it's more urgent that she doesn't want to go until next year. But we've come to with the other side to take for granted that people should be ruthless and to leave the public out of it. But what does it mean? Another $50 million plus raise on abortion and gerrymandering because a new right-wing court will reverse all of that. It would be Brad Schimmel, who is more effective candidate than Dan Kelly. So we got to win in November, then we got to get ready for that race and win that, or we will be back to the 1848 abortion ban, rigged maps, you name it.
All right, with that, folks, we're going to take a break. Ding, ding. Time is up. We got one more episode. And I say ding, ding because it's game on when we come back. We got a Marquette poll, and everybody knows Robert loves to talk polls. You're listening to the Battleground Wisconsin. Ding, ding. Robert, we have the new Marquette University Law School poll. So let me just start by saying what I think is important in it, and then I always look forward to your comments on polling, especially the Marquette poll. We got first top line, nothing's changed in the presidential. There's just a whole lot of noise. It's basically tied. Trump's got a quote, a 51-49 lead, folks. Margin of error, super tight, shocker. What is new and interesting is we get our first Baldwin-Hovde matchup, and Baldwin has a 52-47 lead, which, look, it shows not surprise. We're a close state, but it does demonstrate Baldwin does start from a position of strength that is better than Biden. That is noteworthy, and I think folks should be encouraged by that, but also that number is, you know, doesn't give you any sort of sense of, ooh, slam dunk, it's over. No, not at all. The other number, there's two other numbers I want to call your attention to. One is the state legislature remains wildly unpopular. Only 34% approval rating. That is the second polling in a row where it's stuck at 34%. Folks, Trump is even at like 40. Biden's at like 41%. So those two are not very popular. And the state legislature is significantly less popular. Goes back to the dead horse I keep beating. These races are so important. And we have a huge opportunity, even in some of the races where you may think it leans Republicans. These folks are extraordinarily unpopular for all the reasons we talked about. They didn't fund our education system. Childcare problem is still out there, right? They gave the Brewers a bunch of money. There's a lot of reasons this legislature is unpopular. Robert, your top line thoughts on the Marquette poll.
Well, you're right to call out the virtually no one decided. So theologian once said, you will know them by their groups. This is about group loyalty. People, we make a mistake if we think that all these voters have sorted through the policy platforms and the records and come to these conclusions. So there is kind of a field thing, but there's also which is my side and where are my groups?
And Robert, real quick on that. That is extraordinarily powerful because, you know, folks, we know there are a lot of Republicans who in their gut do not like Trump, but they are not abandoning them. They are sticking to the team, and there's no way in hell they'd ever vote for Biden because that team loyalty is so tight that even Trump, sleazeball.
It's like, and I'm not trying to call out one other group, but I'm just one that came to mind, folks. When you had the Catholic clergy abuse scandal, how many folks have been brought up Catholic? That was their identity. They continued to be to be part of that group, were appalled, but stuck with the group regardless. That's the way we're socialized. It's the way we evolved. So I'm not calling it out. I think that at some point people make difficult decisions. They, you know, and I'm not saying that you should leave the Catholic Church. I'm saying this led to these sort of moral conflicts between your group and what you believe in the world. Some people just remained in denial. Some people struggled with it. Some people actually left the church. And some people stayed around to fix the church and did a lot of work and continue to do a lot of work, which is another approach. So you have that. Then you have, look, Anyone who thinks Tammy Baldwin's a shoo-in, I think that there's a real danger that we're taking this race for granted because Tammy happened to win, run, unlike Russ Feingold in his last two attempts, in very favorable terrain, right? It was 2018 and then it was 2012, both pretty wavy Democrat years in Wisconsin and in the country. And so she, and now this, we don't know what kind of election this is. And this is a 50-50 state, and Hovde, even though he has vulnerabilities, will be very well funded. And look, you say Hovde has these vulnerabilities, he has all these flaws. How many flaws does Donald Trump have, folks? So that's not necessarily the way to analyze the possibility of losing. Ron Johnson, I mean, my God, how can you have more flaws than Ron Johnson? He's now serving a third term. So we can't take that for granted. I think with the legislature, I give less stock to this because this has been true in Congress in a long time, but you would then dig deeper and find that they like their congressperson, even if they hate Congress. And so it doesn't mean they're going to throw, if they really hated all the incumbents, they'd throw the bums out despite the redistricting and the drawing of maps that make them uncompetitive. They do it in primaries and they're not. So you have to dig deeper,
Well,
but
we
it is
haven't,
part of.
Robert, a lot of the folks in the legislature have been untouchable no matter what is going on. You couldn't throw the bums out. There are a number of seats now where it's within air, lean Republican, lean Dem, plus there's about 10 that just go straight Democrat. So there's real opportunity there. And yes, there is some of that, but you got to run and tag and attach that to the guy. It does matter. The legislature's numbers weren't like that 2 years ago. So there is something happening. I hear what you're saying, but I don't want to dismiss it.
Okay, I'm
Just like I
cracking.
hear what you're saying, but like I think it's opportunity. And I want folks to feel that opportunity because the headwinds are, as you said, they're not like 18 or 12.
No, there's not disagreement between us on that because you put a finer point on it. There is an opportunity, but one has to take it. And what does that mean? Too many Democrats have unintentionally run as defenders of the status quo that is unpopular. I mean, if you're not for shaking things up, if you're not for naming culprits that are responsible for the problems people are facing, like the healthcare industry, like the utilities, right? And then that when they are naming false culprits, because what you have on the MAGA side of the equation is a fake reform, a fake populism, then they'll vote for the stale static, I'm very careful status quo, they'll vote for the MAGA. But I think they'll vote for the genuine reformer every time if they name what they're going to do. So why are hospitals closing in the Chippewa Valley? Because we let the hospital industry take over, just like utilities, the entire healthcare delivery system, and they're profit seeking, and they've created a gigantic mess just to extract profits from people. The only solution, again, is democratic regulation control and to take that power back. And a lot of Democrats are afraid to do that because there are powerful interests. You need to be a reformer to take advantage of the opportunity you have rightly identified, Matt.
And look, the playbook is right there. Public education, just what I mean, we talked about 60% last week winning on the referendums being a low number. It's still overwhelming. Public education's wildly popular. It's very clear the public gets it's not being funded properly. Run on that. Run on it and tag the quote popular, "You're my congressman" for it. Because a lot of people never don't know, and the election's about reminding people what they voted. By the way, childcare, nothing solved. Run on it. Same thing with the health system. If you're running for one of the three new, well, Jody Emerson's been reconstructed, three new assembly seats up there, and you're not going after the healthcare industry and talking about the systemic problems and being for accepting the Medicaid money and for BadgerCare public option and expanding it, like you are just leaving gold on the table, right? Just like if you're not full-throatedly going after what was a horrendous shared revenue funding deal and talking about what you will actually do when you're in there. The blueprint is out there, and I think it's in the polling demonstrates that this legislature is vulnerable. But you're absolutely right, Robert. We have to be clear about who the enemies are, call them out, and have real solutions that actually reflect what we just said the enemy is, not faux solutions that sort of move the ball or shift it, get you to look at something else, you know, than the real problem. Robert, you get the final word. We got a minute left. And any final thoughts on any other thing in the MU health poll or the law poll? I will add one thing that we had a little disagreement about. Want to get your thoughts on ACA, just even as a topic in support for it. The hostility, there was a rise in sort of the opposition to it. A number of those folks have gone into sort of less, I don't know, and there continues to be an increase. There's over 50% now back support for the Affordable Care Act, where it's more than double digits in terms of its pro against, which I thought just further demonstrates that healthcare is an issue. It's just waiting for Democrats to run on. Robert?
So by running on clear definition, public education, childcare, use your examples. What mainline Democrat consultants will do, they'll do a poll and they'll find something that's generally 80% of the public will say yes to, something very vague and pleasing, and then they'll say run on that. Here's the problem. The other side will say they're pro-education or pro-childcare and put an apple or children on their mailers, and the public won't know what's going on. So you need to be specific about your definition. What plan do you have that costs money and taxes the people who have been not paying their fair share to adequately fund education? What would it mean concretely to people on childcare? Look, President Biden, the leader of the Democratic Party, has set the example, universal K-4, universal K-3, and then affordable pre-care where it's capped. If you're lower income, you don't pay above a certain percentage of income. That was in Build Back Together. The problem with Biden for him is people just say, you're the president. Why couldn't you get it? He can't run on trying to do it, passing the House, because no one's going to follow or give him an alibi for Manchin and Sinema and what they did if they even follow at that level. So it doesn't help Biden, but he has set an example for the whole party. Follow it. As far as the Affordable Care Act, look, this is a huge opportunity. President that Trump is trying to back away from repealing it, and he's not going to be able to get away with it. And Biden is, and his campaign is going to nail him. We got to nail all these Republicans who actually want to get rid of it. And I would, the way I'd read these numbers is, this is widely popular, but it lacks salience right now because it isn't being talked about enough. So that's one of the things we at Citizen Action intend to do. And please join us, because it has been very hard to get the Democratic consultants and the campaigns to actually run on this. Despite, Matt, I told you, in the budget fight, within the Democratic establishment, they had numbers that said that the most important, best thing to talk about in the budget was affordable health care. The problem is the governor didn't even have any real proposals around it that were significant. We have a proposal. We put it forward. Every Democrat but two has co-sponsored it. No Republican supports it. They've killed it in the committee process without hearings. We can run on this, and we want you to join us to talk to enough voters to win legislative races and make healthcare an issue this race, because it also will greatly damage Trump if we can center the healthcare issue.
So folks, please get involved. Just to put a point on the polling, since we were talking about the polling, in June of 2017, the affordable health care was favorable by 41% and unfavorable by 51%, with 7 just not clear. Now it's 10 points higher at 51 to 38 unfavorable. So the unfavorable has dropped 13 points over the last 8 years, right? So that just shows that there is movement in this, and it does demonstrate the opportunity around this issue. Folks, we got to wrap up this Battleground Wisconsin.
One quick thing, and one is people have the program, so that's why it becomes more popular. We all knew that the longer we could keep it, the more popular it would become. Look at Social Security, Medicare. The other thing is, Tammy Baldwin is a healthcare hero. So if you want to reelect Tammy Baldwin, you need to center healthcare and make it a major issue in this election.
Folks, we'll see you next week at the Battleground, Wisconsin.